We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome. This is Lisa Payne Nager. Thanks for joining me this evening, this Wednesday evening. We're here every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Wild week, very busy week. If you did not have an opportunity to join me at the Family Vision Library last week, Thursday and Friday, you missed a great seminar by Lauren Spivak. We spent two evenings there with Lauren Spivak. Just a wonderful, wonderful event. You know, some great common sense ideas on capitalism and the free markets that you just don't hear very much about, and presented in a very entertaining fashion. And it was a great event. And thank you to Lauren Spivak for coming out here to St. Louis again to do that follow up seminar to the seminar that he presented in April. And thank you very much to John Thrower of the Family Vision Library. They always welcome us with open arms out there. If you have an opportunity, if you're in the St. Peter's area and you have not visited the Family Vision Library, drop in on them at 2020 Parkway Drive, I believe, in St. Peter's. Just a wonderful facility, beautiful facility. They have a lot of events, a lending library there. They have a lot of homeschooling activities and classes there, as well as some other classes as well. Look them up on the Internet, Family Vision Library. It's a great community asset in St. Peter's. So if you have an opportunity, go in and patronize those folks. They do a fabulous job, and they have always been very generous to us and welcomed us with open arms, which enables us to bring the folks great seminars like Lauren Spivak and Brian Ray and things that we've done in the past. So, again, I just wanted to put that out there at the beginning of the evening to thank all of the folks that joined us out there at Family Vision. And Lauren Spivak, if you missed it, you will have an opportunity to see Lauren Spivak, not for two nights like you did here last week, but Lauren, Concerned Women for America is taking Lauren Spivak on a tour around Missouri. That he's going to be all over the place in this month, in September, starting September 23rd. September 23rd, he'll be back here in the St. Louis area from 6 to 9 p.m. at the St. Louis County Library headquarters. You'll have an opportunity to sit in with him and hear his great ideas. And Tuesday the 24th, he'll be in Franklin County, and he winds up 7 more appearances throughout the state. I'll post all of those appearances up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Really, folks, it may not sound like a great way to spend an evening to sit and listen to talk about the free market economy for a few hours, but I'm telling you, it was very entertaining, and it's great stuff, and it's not the kind of thing that you get on even Fox News or any of the news channels. And if you have kids, they really missed a great opportunity to hear about the free market economy and how it's supposed to work, because I'm guaranteeing you they are not getting that kind of information in any institutional school setting. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And take a look on the calendar page. All that information will be up there for you. And you can also go to CWSA.org. We'll have also all of this information about Lauren's tour across Missouri. Oh, a lot of things. Just tons of stuff to talk about tonight. We've got a great lineup for you tonight, but there are a couple of little things I want to kind of talk about and rant a little bit about. We'll touch lightly on the Syrian thing, the Syrian thing, but I want to start off closer to home. I was made aware today by some friends on Facebook that there is an interim House committee that's going on a road trip in September to get your feedback about education. This ought to be good. So it seems to be a trend. Okay, I have a couple of things to say about these tours by the legislators. It seems to be a trend now for the legislature and the legislators to go on these tours across the state to get your feedback, to know, to connect with the people, and you know, because you can tell we're coming up on an election year. They want to look you in the eye, ask for your vote, let you know that they're doing everything that they can in Jefferson City to make your life better. You know, folks, don't buy it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. A couple of months ago, there was another tour, and I don't remember the exact name of the committee. It was the Committee for Shrinking Government, and they also went on a tour. Let me tell you, folks, these are a few. I don't know if you remember. Go back on the radio page. Go to culturevigilante.wordpress.com and click on the radio page and look for the show that we did on the Delphi technique. Or go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition on the radio page, too. Look for the Delphi technique. Folks, this is a propaganda tour. And if you haven't recognized it by now, please take the time to consider this perspective. These folks are on a propaganda tour. They want to sell you a bill of goods. For one thing, an election year is coming up, and they're all on the campaign trail again. Another thing is they have got you. When the Tea Party started in 2009, the Tea Party was very independent, had a lot of fired up folks, out of control, you know, kind of independent thinking folks, which is a very dangerous thing for the establishment government as it is, especially the establishment Republicans. And they immediately set to work to infiltrate and neutralize the Tea Party, which they did very successfully. This is another ploy to do just that. Okay, the Tea Party has been neutralized very successfully. You know, I mean, they're still out there. There's still a lot of people alive and kicking, but I'm telling you, it's not at the strength that it was in 2009. It can be again, but it's not now. And one of the ways that the government does is, you know, they have been very successful in putting some of their folks out there, teaching them the language, teaching them the conservative speak, you know, giving them the talking points, putting them on display for you so that you can identify with them, so that you think that they will be working for you. And there are particular members of the legislature in the House and the Senate that folks will identify with as specific Tea Party type folks. And I'm telling you, folks, don't buy it. Don't take the bait, because they go on these tours. And just for example, this legislative tour for the House Executive Committee, Interim House Committee on Education, will be going on a tour. Let's see, they've got 6 stops, maybe 7 stops, beginning September 23rd, and they've got a list of topics that they want to cover with you, and they want your feedback on topics like the transfer of students and a statewide plan for addressing persistently low-achieving and failing schools, early childhood education, quality educator evaluations, and quality educator preparation programs, school calendar and increasing hours of instruction, remediation and acceleration, common core standards, virtual schools and technology in the 21st century, school safety, including bullying, harassment, etc., parent-community-school relationships and transparency, wraparound services and community education, college students' perspective on high school experience. Okay, folks, they have a list, they have an agenda that they are trying to push while they're supposedly getting your feedback. Nothing on that list addresses the real problems with education in Missouri or across the country. What that list is just a complete list of, let's enable this bureaucracy to keep going. Let's get your feedback on that so that you think we're listening to you. And then I'm going to go back to Jefferson City, and I'm not going to do a damn thing that's really going to do anything for education. You know, nobody's talking about eliminating the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education or weakening their power in Missouri. That department has created more problems in this state for education than anybody in the legislature, because they can act autonomously and have, they're the ones who brought you the Common Core standards here to Missouri without the purview, you know, without the blessing of the legislature. They spend more money without the blessing of the legislature, who's supposed to appropriate funds. You know, nobody's talking about doing anything about eliminating that issue. You know, and if you want to get into micromanaging issues with schools, which of course the legislature does and they shouldn't, let's talk about getting them out of the mix as well. That you can be darn sure that that's not going to be a topic for discussion on this tour, about having the legislature back out of issues like, you know, discipline issues and social promotion issues and teacher tenure issues. And all of those things that the legislature should not be involved in, those should all be local control issues in your school district, in your particular school, run by parents, run by your elected school board. None of those things are on that list or are up for discussion. So I'm telling you, folks, this is a Delphi technique issue. This is because they think they can herd the masses in like sheep, you know, and through your participation get everybody feeling warm and cozy and fuzzy because you were all there and they shook your hand and they looked you in the eye and you all smiled at each other. They think that you will buy that kind of Delphi technique, and if they give you this nice list, this very nice organized list of issues, which are serious issues, serious educational issues in Missouri, but, you know, none of those issues will be addressed through the legislature. You can only fix these problems, folks, if you kick that stuff back to the local school districts. You cannot fix education through bureaucracy and more legislation and more public funding, you know, which is where all this goes to. You just can't fix it. So when you see these kinds of things coming around, attend these meetings. Don't let them bulldoze you with their agenda. Go in there and tell them what you really want them to do. Tell them you want them to get the heck out of your school district. Tell them you want them to neutralize the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Tell them you don't want them busing kids here and there and all around the place. You know, tell them if they really are serious, and they're not going to do it, but if they are really serious about solving the problems in the legislature with education, tell them to stop making laws about legislation and start rescinding laws about education. Because every time another law is passed, another bill is passed, your freedoms and your ability to act autonomously and choose education for your kids is squeezed a little bit tighter. So this list that they're presenting to you is more bureaucracy, less freedom. Go in there and tell them, you, instead of creating more bureaucracy, you want them to take the bureaucracy away. Let's see how they react to that. I don't think they're going to react to that too well. Okay, speaking of education, let's see, got a couple things I wanted to kind of bring up. We're going to have Michael Dudley. He's the Director of Internal Affairs at HSLDA. He's going to be on with us a little bit later on. There's some homeschooling issues to talk about. Speaking of homeschooling, my very good friend Dr. Rain, let me see if I can get my email up. He sent me an email this week. Homeschooling is on the rise. Well, we kind of knew that, but there's been a study, and he sent out a little report. Let's see. Amber Stark in Redford, 2013, explained that the data for the National Household Educational Surveys programs are nationally representative of students enrolled in kindergarten through 12, including children enrolled in private schools, enrolled in public schools, and homeschooled, and the total number of completed questionnaires was over 17,000, 17,563. Homeschool is still growing, and the basic gist of the survey was that homeschool calculations follow previous homeschool reports by including children ages 5 through 17, and they conclude that 3.4% or over 1,770,000 of the U.S. K-12 students were homeschooled in the spring of 2012. The 95% confidence interval would be about 1.54 million to 2 million as it relates to the survey, some of the reasons that people are homeschooling their kids is a concern about the environment of other schools. 91% answered that question. A desire to improve moral instruction, 77%, which, you know, that's a good one. Dissatisfaction with the academic instruction at other schools, 74%. That's the reason I homeschooled my kids. A desire to provide religious instruction, 64%. A desire to provide a non-traditional approach to a child's education, 44%. Other reasons, 37%. Child has other special needs, 17%. And the child has a physical or mental health problem, 15%. And when asked what the most important reason for homeschooling, the parents answered as followed, 25% answered a concern for the environment of other schools. 21% answered other reasons. 19% answered a dissatisfaction with the academic instruction at other schools. 16% answered a desire to provide religious instruction. 5% a desire to provide moral instruction. 5% a desire to provide non-traditional approach to child education. And 5% a child has mental or physical health problems. And I think Dr. Ray released a study on this a couple of years ago, and I think at that time he concluded that there were probably about probably right around these numbers for his study as well. But, you know, to have these kinds of things backed up is very interesting. Homeschooling is on the rise, and we are going to have Mike Dudley on to talk about homeschooling in a little bit here. Couple other things. Last week, if you listened to the show, we had a great show last week. We had Dwayne Lester on. My God, nobody's reporting. I mean, you know, really, it's probably just been within the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, maybe a little longer, that people have really started to pay attention to what's been going on in Jefferson City. I mean, a larger part of the masses, I guess since the Tea Party kind of exploded. And having light shone on the dark corners of the cesspool in Jefferson City has really changed the dynamics there. And Dwayne Lester's done a job down there like nobody's business. And with this Department of Revenue issue, he's covered it so well. You know, not only do we have an issue, you know, not only do we know now that people are, you know, people's identification is being taken and sent to the hinterlands, to the Homeland Security Department, and we're all on record, you know, all of our conceal and carry licenses are on, you know, we've all got a file somewhere down in Washington, D.C. Dwayne Lester has yet again come up with some very startling information. He's going to come on. He released a story on Monday at the Missouri Torch. Go to MissouriTorch.com. Read it there. But we'll have Dwayne Lester on in a few minutes to talk about it. What did I see? Oh, hot air. It's not only a problem in Missouri. Hot Air released a story earlier this week. The DEA accesses Americans' phone records dating back to, guess when, 1987. So it's not new, folks. The federal government has been gathering information on us since probably before 1987. Let's see. Let me see if I can read a blurb here. For at least six years, law enforcement officials working on counter-narcotics programs had routine access using subpoenas to an enormous AT&T database that contains the records of decades of American phone calls, parallel to covering a far longer time than the National Security Agency's hotly disputed collection of phone logs. So anyway, that was at hotair.com, folks. It was published on September 2nd by Ed Morrissey. You can take a look at it there. We're going to take a real quick break here. We'll just go right to it. There's a lot of stuff to cover tonight. We'll cover it later, but we've got Dwayne Lester on the line. We'll take a real quick break and come back with Dwayne, and we'll talk about what he has uncovered, the funny business from the DOR at this point.
Hello. It's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on The Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths. We tell the truth. We get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are back again with Dwayne Lester from the Missouri Torch. It did kind of explode last week when Dwayne was on. He was telling me all the stuff, and he told me off the air that he was going to, you know, release this story of other funny business from the Department of Revenue. He's here with us tonight to give us the details of all of that. You're just going to die, folks. You're just going to die when you hear it. Thanks, Dwayne, for being on with me tonight again.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Dwayne, here we go. I mean, I was kind of nuts last week after our interview. I was pretty hot under the collar. This story that you released on Monday over the holiday weekend with the Department of Revenue selling millions of records to third parties,
right,
and for a fraction of what they're going to charge you to get those records, let us have it. You're on.
Well,
go for it.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. You really just kind of blurted out Omar Davis, the former director of the Missouri Department of Revenue, let this out in one of the DOR hearings, and had I not been there live streaming it, I wouldn't have heard it. Who would have heard it? The people there in the committee hearing. But he just
says it is
easier and cheaper for third parties to get your personal information from the Department of Revenue than it is for you. And he went on to explain, and I'll just lay it out for you. Lisa, if you were to go to the DMV and say, I would like my personal driving record, they would say, very good, it will cost you $7.88. If a third party calls up and says, I would like all of the records you have for 2013, they will pay a set price for the first 50,000, which is a fraction of a cent per file.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the first 50,000. For the next 50,000 and up, it is, and I should have had this right out here, but it is like 0.0003 cents per file. So all in all, the first 100,000 files will cost them around $215. They're buying these files by the millions.
My God.
Nothing. It's a couple thousand dollars, and they get, you know, a million files. When I looked into this first, I started looking and doing research on what was going on, and I found there was a lawsuit back in 2008, I believe, and the Department of Revenue was sued by three corporations because Omar Davis, while he was there, the Department of Revenue raised the price up to $7 a file. Well, these corporations who were buying the files didn't like that, and so they sued. They took it to court, and the court sided with the corporations and said that you can't raise the price that high because it is the Sunshine Law dictates access to those files, and pricing it at $7 an hour or $7 a file made it impossible for them to get those files. So
why is it okay to charge?
Like,
yeah. So why is it okay to charge independent people?
I don't know. The difference. Actually, I think the difference they're saying is that you're going in and you're buying a physical file. They're buying digital files, but still, they're buying your personal information.
Your personal information.
A fraction of what you can get it for. And what what's happening with this information, when I started doing the research, it floored me that this had been going on, and I hadn't heard about it. I don't think a lot of people had heard about it.
Oh, no.
Back then, when Omar was in office, there was actually a lawsuit against Omar Davis, against the Department of Revenue, because one of the corporations who had bought this information, their name was ShadowSoft, they bought the information. And what they do is they buy this information, they aggregate it, they have all kinds of different information sources, they put it all together in a file, and then they turn around and sell that to someone else. And Omar told me that they will actually buy the information for, like I said, a fraction of a cent, put it with this other stuff, this other information that they found, and turn around and sell it back to Missourians for like $30. They'll turn around and sell this information to businesses for like $30. So what Omar said is we are actually subsidizing these businesses' profit model. We are subsidizing them because we don't charge as much as we could, as much as we should even. And there are states. He told me that North Carolina charges $8.50 a file. So
okay,
it's not impossible.
Okay, right, exactly. It's not impossible. But let's back up a little bit here, and I think we kind of talked about this last week a little bit, but I want to talk about it again. Why is your personal license information, which has got your personal information, it's got your height, it's your weight, it's your birthday. In some cases, it used to be your Social Security number. It's got medical restrictions on there. You know, if you have a medical restriction, it's got all kinds of personal information on there. Why is that public?
Well, a lot of that information, it is restricted. I want to make that clear. Access to it is restricted. You've got to have a reason to get that, and there are exemptions, different exemptions for who can access it. Not just anybody can call up and say, "Give me Lisa's file." They have to have an access and an exemption for that. But
if I wanted to file an LLC and become a company, and I wanted to create a mailing list of everybody in Missouri, maybe I was supporting a political candidate or something, and I created an LLC, the best way to get information on Missouri is to go to the Department of Revenue and get the driver's license records, because everybody has a driver's license, and I could just get that and I don't have to be anybody in particular.
Well, there's actually a website. If you go to the Department of Revenue, or if you go to the Missouri Torch, I explained that there are entities who are exempted, and the Department of Revenue actually has a website that's all about who can buy your records. It blew my mind that there's actually a website out there on how to buy records. But the exemptions are like government agencies, circuit courts, law enforcement. But what they exempt on there, I don't understand why they would need to buy a million records. Like number five is authorized representative, agent, contractor, or employer by such of a legitimate business of the vehicle driving record be blah, 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 blah. Why do they need a million records? What they're doing, these companies are getting exempted. They're buying millions of records. They're combining with other information they have, and they're turning around and selling it. And you're right. Some of these records, like back in 2008 when I started going far back, ShadowSoft actually took that information they bought and put it on the Internet. And that was at a time when a lot of Missourians were using their Social Security number as their driver's license number.
Yes.
So everything was out there, including their driver's license number. And that's why the lawsuit came forward, because the people who were suing were saying that they had violated the Federal Driver's Privacy Protection Act. And that's what dictates this whole thing, is the Federal Driver's Privacy Protection Act. It says who can access this file, this information, who's exempted from it, and who's prohibited by it. Right.
Well, let me.
I asked the DOR, I said, who's buying these records, and how often are they buying them? First of all, let me step back. The bulk record sales for the first 50,000 copies, I told you. It was cheap. It is actually 0.0043 cents per file. And I was right. For the second 50,000, it's 0.0003 cents per file. So about $215 for the first 100,000. So who's buying them? I asked that. They said the purchasers of motor vehicle and driver's license record include resellers, which is what we've talked about so far, people who buy these things, combine it, aggregate the data, turn around and sell it. When you get, I've had people mention on the site that they have received advertisements or flyers from car dealers just about the time that they are getting ready to buy a car because they just paid off their other car. They get this in the mail. That's because somebody's bought their driving record, sold it to a dealer, and the dealer knows when you're in the market for a new car just from your personal information. But attorneys buy them, towing companies buy them, lien holders, dealers, employers, and insurance companies. In 2007, the Department of Revenue sold 90 million files. That's in 2007. 6 years later, they told me today that they're selling 150 million files a year. So they've almost doubled the number of electronic files they're selling in 6 years.
My gosh. My God. You know, okay, so let me ask you this. In all of your research, you know, in exposing the fact that they're fast and loose with our files, you know, to resellers and other entities, and while you've been covering the hearings in Jefferson City, and we know, obviously, that all of our information has gone to MorphoTrust, who obviously sends it to Washington, D.C., has anybody said anything about entering the next legislative session to where they would restrict the sharing of our information, where they would bring all of that maybe back home, get rid of MorphoTrust, maybe restrict the sharing of the information with all of these third-party entities and protect our privacy? Is anybody interested in our privacy? Is anybody going to do anything about that coming in January?
In my interview with Omar Davis, he brought up a good point, and I noted it in the article I wrote on The Torch. The people who sued in 2008, the companies who sued were companies named R.L. Polk & Company, and they're the ones who run Carfax. And that's not a bad service. If you buy a car, you'd like to be able to buy a Carfax report and see if that car has ever been in a wreck. Samba Holding Incorporated provides driver risk management services to private businesses and government agencies, and Experian Information Solutions, of course, they do the credit reports. Mm-hmm. All three of those companies who sued the Department of Revenue in 2008, they're all out of state. They are all outside the state of Missouri. That's important because Davis pointed out the Supreme Court ruling in McBurney versus Young, which said the state can limit its information to state citizens. The Supreme Court says, yes, this is public information, but it doesn't have to be public information to everyone, and the state can restrict that information to simply state citizens. So, the state of Missouri could come out and say, we're not giving our Department of Revenue files to corporations or entities outside the state. They do that, and the Supreme Court would support.
And they don't need to enact new legislation to do it. It's already on the books.
Have to enact anything. You don't need to have the General Assembly do anything. It could simply be a policy change in the Department of Revenue or statewide. I was told today that I had someone on Facebook say that they believe the Department of Agriculture sells records too. So it's not just the Department of Revenue. It is the state government across the board.
Yeah, but, okay, so, I mean, all of those companies that you listed that you sued, the Carfax company and the Samba Holdings, the risk management services, none of those people really need my personal information to do what they do. Carfax does not need my address. You know, driver risk management does not need my address unless they're trying to market to me. You know, Experian does not need my address. So,
you're preaching to the choir on that one, Lisa. I can't debate that.
I
don't believe
they
do.
So,
who runs the risk? We're looking at the A to B transaction here, but what's the B to C? Who's buying the information from the vendors? You know,
right.
if the resellers buy this information, combine it with other information, then who are they turning around and selling it to?
Right.
And how secure are their servers where they keep all that information?
Well, yeah, that's an issue. You know, or maybe they just mail them the disk through the mail. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
That would not surprise me.
Well, they've done it before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. So, did you get a dollar figure about how much money that the Department of Revenue made last year on selling our records?
No. But can you imagine?
We could do the math.
I can work something up here real quick. But I mean, just consider the fact that they sold 150 million records.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just see if I can pull a calculator up here. 150 billion records. There's my calculator. What bothers me more about this is not, they are making a lot of money, some money. I won't say a lot of money, but think of all the money they're leaving on the table.
Okay.
150 million times 0.0045, which is what we said, that's $675,000.
Yeah, so more than $500,000. It's awesome.
Yeah. So
a lot of money.
Is it a lot of money?
A drop in the bucket.
Where's my calculator here? 150 million. Let's clear that out.
If they sold them at $7 a pop, right, they'd make a lot more money.
Yeah, numbers don't work well on the radio, but I think this one will. So you've got 675,000 versus, looks like $1 billion.
Wow. Well, that would help the budget out a little bit.
Yeah, it's $1 billion they leave it on the table.
Oh, okay. Dwayne?
It is literally $1 billion. That blows my mind. I hadn't done that math before, but yeah, $1 billion they leave it on the table. Now, could we put in the tax cut if we were, making $1 billion selling our private data? I mean, that's the point that is at the end of the story. If we can't, by, federally, prohibit the sale, we should at least be able to make a profit on it.
Yeah, I know everything always comes down to money. I get it. But to be really honest with you, I don't think they've got any business releasing that information to anybody. You know, most people, I would think, before all of this hullabaloo started up, I think if you ask the man on the street, is your personal are your personal records that you release to the government to, buy licenses, et cetera, is that private? I would think most people would have thought it was private.
Well,
and
yeah.
until this all came out, I don't think that anybody really understood how open your life is. And how the state government is really just pretty much selling you out for a small buck, and they hold in very low regard your personal privacy. And it doesn't seem like anybody in Jefferson City is hot on the jump to do anything about it in January. I've heard nothing, from anybody about eliminating the Morpho Trust, bringing all of that stuff back to the individual driver's license bureaus to issue the licenses, and none of that. And they have not, and as we found out last week as well, they're still taking digital photographs and sending that information. While they are not applying these digital software to your photograph, they're sending your photograph to Morpho Trust, who is applying that software to your photograph. So everybody's got a bioidentical image in a government file somewhere who's got a Missouri driver's license.
I wrote today at the end of it, I said personal privacy was so pre-1984.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of off the subject. You wrote another – I've had one ear to the ground, not really listening too hard about Medicaid expansion. And what do you know about the Medicaid expansion issue coming up in Missouri? What are you hearing?
I've been told that – honestly, I mean, this will make your head blow up, but what I've been told is that Republicans are kind of looking for a way to do it and save face.
Well, that's not a surprise. I think Tim Jones has been dancing around that hot fire for a long time.
It's not a difficult case to make. I don't know if we just have a hard time. Breitbart said one time, if you can't sell freedom, you suck. And the idea is that we're going to fix If you, we're going to fix the healthcare problem in America by expanding government's role in it or expanding the number of people who are dependent on government sickens me. It is not hard to go back and show the problems with healthcare really start, the biggest problems we have start around, 1965, the Great Society. You know, it always comes back to me to that. And I want to know, where is the left's exit, you know, the exit plan on the war on poverty? Because they have lost. Everything that they put in place from 1965, the declaration of the war on poverty, has failed. We have just as many people impoverished today as we did then. The role to better health care, the role to better everything in America is less government involvement. And the idea that we're going to expand Medicare because we have 800,000 Missourians without health care and this will fix everything is erroneous. It is so far from the truth, and there's nobody out there that, and this frustrates me so much. I don't know if you can tell how animated you've got me, but there's nobody out there who is saying, look, the solution it isn't found in the government. You look at the surgical center of Oklahoma. I wrote about this the other day. The surgical center of Oklahoma, they don't accept Medicare. They don't accept government money of any kind. They publish their prices on the Internet, and their prices for surgery are 1/6 what they cost at other hospitals. The prices are so good, people fly in from Canada to pay for them out of cash. Their prices are so good that employers will cover the cost of a surgery because it's cheaper than the copay and using the insurance. Their prices are that good because they're based in the free market. You go to a hospital that is running off of Medicaid and Medicare, they are losing money. They're slashing services. In St. Joseph, Missouri, they're getting rid of their ambulance department because implementing Obamacare is going to cost them more money than it's helping them. So they have to look at things they can cut. Now, if they were making money in the free market, if they were basing it in the free market, they would make money. In Wichita, Kansas, there's a doctor who got rid of Medicare patients, and he allows people to pay him $100 a month for routine checkups. $100 a month. He's making, I think he said, like $200,000 a year. He's making all kinds of money in the free market, and he has fewer patients. They get better care, and everybody wins. Now, do they keep health insurance for catastrophic health care? Yes, everybody should. But everybody should also be able to have health savings accounts that allow them to pay for this. They don't need to turn to the government and say, you know, I've got this problem. I need you to take a gun and go loot this guy's wallet so I can pay for my health care. That's not freedom. That's not how America works. And that won't solve the problem we're looking at today.
Well, Dwayne, tell us how you really feel.
I mean, this is something that just gets me fired up. I mean, this bothers me so much.
This is going to be the next head exploding issue in Missouri, I think. I think they're going to push this Medicaid expansion thing really hard. I think it's just going to be the next deal, and it's right before the election. So, folks, this is something to watch. You put a great – actually, that article that you posted, when was it, yesterday? Yesterday. It's got that great video on there with John Stossel in that Oklahoma surgery center. It's amazing, folks. So go to themissouritorch.com. Sign up for a daily email. You'll get the Missouri Torch delivered right to your inbox every day. Dwayne, thank you so much. You've done a great job covering this stuff. I hope you'll come back very soon and keep us updated on all the stuff that's going on.
It's my pleasure. I'll come anytime you have me.
Thank you. We're going to take a real quick break, and we're going to come back with Frieda and Judy from the Missouri Precinct Project.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution, and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately and the second ultimately on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horn?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante. We are back again with the ladies from Missouri Precinct Project, Judy Sofka and Frida Keough, and they have got a whole bunch of updates for us and action items and things going on in Missouri that you need to be aware of and engaged in. Thank you, ladies, for coming back on the program.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good. Thanks for waiting. We ran a little bit long, but... I got an email from you today, Judy, I think. What's going on?
Well, we have I'm probably going to sound like a calendar of events here, but...
Go ahead. Let's have everything.
Okay. One local issue that is, we kind of encompass the entire state, so we like to get the word out for different areas. And
absolutely.
Tomorrow in Lee's Summit, which is one of the areas outside Kansas City, there's going to be a meeting of their city council to vote on a plan called the N-150 Corridor Overlay. And mm-hmm. they're asking citizens who live in and around the area to hopefully attend that meeting. That's going to be tomorrow night at 6:15. And if people can possibly, there's two of the city councilmen that they are actually targeting in the sense of trying to get people to contact them to reject this plan. It would impinge greatly on private property rights. There is a new Facebook page for the group called Missourians Against Agenda 21. And the two councilmen's names and emails and phone numbers are listed on that Facebook page. I could give them to you now, but I don't know if you have time to go into all of that. But, anybody who lives in and around Lee's Summit, if they can try and attend this meeting, many of the citizens there are uniting to try and push back against this. So that's a local issue happening there. Gosh, there's several events coming up next weekend. It's going to be busy. There's in Kansas City, both events are going to be held. One is the Midwest Leadership Conference, and Alan West is going to be speaking there. And then about a mile away at the convention center is going to be Covenant America, and MOP is planning to have a table there for information. The point of Covenant America is to get people engaged and involved in groups and to, you know, have some direction as to how they can be helpful in trying to, you know, activate against some of the problems that we're all dealing with here. And then on, you may have already addressed this, the CPAC coming to St. Charles, the CPAC St. Louis 2013.
Yeah.
And MOP is going to be, yeah, we're going to have a be part of, well, it's the double booth. It's going to have 10 conservative groups sharing that booth, so there would be a great place to come and get some good information. The last I saw and heard, Mike Lee and Rick Santorum will be some of the, well, they have quite a few good speakers. Those were the ones that I highlighted. So you can come visit us at our MOP table there. Then going into October, on October 12th, the Rally for Common Sense is going to be coming back again. They had a really successful event last year, and we plan on having a MOP booth down there. And the whole point of us going to these venues and events is to try and grow our membership and to our outreach and to get people involved in their local governance. That this is the whole point of the Precinct Project, is to get people you know, engaged locally, because this is where we can be the most effective. And so you know, we want to kind of spread the word about that, and of course our main issue is to try and fill the Central Committee with constitutional conservatives and try to bring our principles and values to the party. And in that same vein, a little bit off the calendar topic, there is a really great Kindle book that's out now, and it's only 99 cents on Amazon, so it's definitely a bargain. And it's called Taking Back Your Government, the Neighborhood Precinct Committee Man Strategy. And it would be a recommended read for people to see why being part of the central committee of the party across the state, each county has its own central committee. And, of course, we are structured in a way where we are striving to get a county coordinator in each county. So with their mission, basically, to be to try and find good conservative candidates to fill these openings on the central committee. And it's a pretty standard percentage that about 40% to 50% of these positions actually go unfilled, not mm-hmm. only in Missouri, but nationwide. And so, and this is where, you know, a lot of the influence can come, they basically trickle up. I think we've talked about this in the past. But this book, this little Kindle book for 99 cents, will really lay it out and explain it. The gentleman who wrote it is actually from Arizona. So they're structured a little bit differently, but he encourages people to, even in Missouri, each county is structured differently. So everybody has to investigate their own county and find out about their own committee, how you would get on that committee when you, right. you have to register to be on the ballot and so forth. So
yep. But the theory of the whole issue is that if you want to infuse some fresh blood into the establishment Republican Party, you need to start at your precinct level and grow it up.
Absolutely. And we call it the trickle-up theory rather than the trickle-down.
That's the point I always try to make, that we need to elect committee people from the precinct, township, or ward level in every county. And then populate those with conservatives, constitutional conservatives, because those people then get appointed to various senatorial committees, legislative committees,
right.
and the state committee. And the state committee actually wields a lot of power. We were able to elect a new party chair last year because we were able to elect about 40% of the state committee people with new liberty-minded conservatives, mm-hmm. and they were able to elect a new party chair. It was a very tight race. The status quo didn't think we were going to be able to do it, but we did it. But
yeah,
we cannot let up. We need to do more of that. We need to get more people in those positions.
That's right, because usually the establishment Republican Party kind of picks and chooses and weasels their people into positions. And because
exactly.
you had so many fresh faces and so much fresh blood into that system, you guys were able to push back on that and get some people in there that, you know, you wanted in there, which is awesome.
One of the things we're finding out is that in various counties across the state, the central committee people will not determine what the number of committee people is that are available in that county, because they kind of like to keep that under the radar, like to keep it close to the vest. So when there is an election or when there is somebody that has to be appointed, they can trot out more people than there actually is. They appoint
right.
somebody. And we need to stop that.
Yeah, a little more transparency would definitely help. So
right.
speaking of establishment Republicans, Frieda, you and I were at Ann Wagner's office a week or so ago, and has anybody heard from Ann Wagner? We all wanted to make her quite aware that we intend for her to vote to defund Obamacare. Has anybody heard from her office?
No. I have called the office several times after our little get-together because that lady that was there, Erin Olson, she said to me and another lady that she would set up a meeting with Anne where we could come in and the three of us would have a meeting to discuss the things that we wanted to talk to Anne about. I have called her several times, and another lady has called, Nancy Aldrich has called her several times. We don't even get an answer.
So Anne's back back in D.C. now, right? Too late.
Well, no, she's still here.
Is she? Okay.
She's back and forth. I called the office again today. I talked to Brett Mulvihill, and I told him all this, and he apologized. Of course, he's going to apologize. But again, I don't get a call back. They just ignore him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Time for primary season. Primary season is around the corner. Time to start pushing back.
Somebody else says, Ann Wagner, that seat is a Republican seat, just like Lacey Clay in the first district is a Democrat seat, is it a Republican seat. She is in there for life, unless we find somebody with big money.
Yeah.
And so she can do pretty much what she wants,
and she knows
unfortunately. I would urge people to call their local office and to call the D.C. office and tell them that they want Ann Wagner to defund Obamacare, not as a standalone bill, as she keeps saying. It has to be part of the continuing resolution. A standalone bill doesn't go anywhere. She can vote for that until the cows come home.
It doesn't do
anything.
Okay,
so
ladies,
call.
All right, how can we find Missouri Precinct Project?
You go, there's a website, moprecinctproject.org.
All right, very good. Thank you, ladies, for coming on.
Lisa, can I also add, we do have a Facebook page and a Twitter page. We'd love to have people join us and build our visibility there. Just look us up under MOP, and on Twitter we're at MOP.org.
Okay,
Lisa,
very good.
Lisa,
yeah.
I need to say two more things, please.
Okay, go ahead.
Very short. The September 11th is the veto session. We have to override three vetoes from the governor. The Second Amendment, House Bill 436, the tax cut, House Bill 253, and the Agenda 21 bill, SB 265.
Can you finish that?
People need to call their representatives and tell them to vote for those overrides.
Okay, we lost you, Frieda. What are those bills again?
Second Amendment, House Bill 436, the tax cut, House Bill 253, Agenda 21, SB 265.
Very good. Okay, ladies,
one more sentence, please. I need one more sentence.
Okay, go ahead, please.
We, like Judy got into it, we need to pay attention to our local elections. We have an election year coming up. The first filing dates are coming up I can't find it right now. But we need to start filing for these various offices, and people need to pay attention to that.
Maybe that information would be on your website. Yes?
Not yet, but it's going to be on their pipe soon.
Okay.
December 17, people need to start filing for municipal elections February 25, people need to start filing for their county seats. It's on the website. It will be on the website soon, and then people can look it up.
Okay, and look for Missouri Precinct Project on Facebook and Twitter. Frieda and Judy, thank you for coming on, and I hope to come on again very soon.
Okay.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're gonna take a very quick break, and we will be back with Mike Dudley.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
Maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante, and we're on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And, you know, if you listen to the program for any length of time, that we like to talk about education here. I'm a homeschool mom. I've been involved in the educational issues of my kids for a very long time. I used to sit on the school board before I became a homeschool mom. That's how I became a homeschool mom. And, you know, as of the last couple of years, Common Core has been a big issue. Public education has always been a problem, but it seems to be hitting a fervent fire in the hearts and the bellies of the folks across America now. Last week, The Slate wrote an article, if you send your kid to private school, you are a bad person. There seems to be a leftist push to try to hold on for dear life, to protect all that lovely money that's going into public education. And as we talked about at the top of the show, my very good friend Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute released some information last week about how homeschooling is growing across the United States. It has been for several years. Good thing. I can tell you it was one of the best decisions I ever made for my kids. You know, it's a hard row to hoe. It's not an easy way to do things, but, you know, nothing of value really is very easy in this life. And I will tell you, folks, homeschooling is, as you know, or you may not know, increasingly becoming more of an issue as Common Core is implemented across the country. They want to get all of the homeschoolers under that umbrella as well. And, you know, we're very focused on it here in the United States. It's very important for us to be focused on it around the world as well, because there have been a couple of cases, and Homeschool Legal Defense and ParentalRights.org have been on with us before to talk about these cases in Germany, mainly families and the oppression that homeschool families suffer there. We have Mike Donnelly on with us tonight from HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense. He's the Director of Internal Affairs there, and he's here to tell us about yet another case of homeschool oppression in Germany. Thank you for being on with me tonight, Mr. Donnelly. I appreciate it.
Hi, Lisa. Good to be with you.
We've talked to your counterparts there at parentalrights.org. We're very good friends with Mr. Estrada, and you know they've been on before. We've kind of covered the gamut with the issues from Common Core to the Romicke family. Now there's another family in Germany who've had their children taken away from them for homeschooling, and I wanted you to kind of give us an outline of that case and tell us why it's important for us to follow that case here in the U.S.
Well, Lisa, this is a tragic case, really. The Wunderlich family, beautiful family. I know them personally. I've met them and have known them for years. Just a real basic, down-to-earth Christian homeschooling family. They were trying to find a way to homeschool peacefully by going to other countries in Europe. But eventually, because of the economy and the family has a home in Germany, they were forced to return home there. And just last week, sadly, in an incredible and brutal display of state aggression against a family, a huge swarm of police officers and social workers broke into this family's home and took the four beautiful Wunderlich family children from the home because they had been homeschooling in defiance of a countrywide policy in Germany that basically bans homeschooling. And, the family are they don't know where their children are. They haven't been able to speak with them. It is an unbelievable thing to see and to hear about happening in a country that's a Western democracy, or at least claims to be a Western democracy. And the sad thing about it is that, really, this is not the first time that this has happened in Germany. And, in fact, if you homeschool in Germany, you should expect to have this happen. And unfortunately for the Wunderlich family, what happened was they got back to Germany after kind of being forced to go back for economic reasons. And in Germany, you have to actually register your presence. You have to go to your town hall and tell them that you're there so they know where you are.
Wow.
You have to tell them who your children are. Yeah, it's pretty amazing, pretty totalitarian in my opinion.
Yeah.
But at any rate, they found out they were there. They found out they had kids, and they knew they weren't in school. And within months, the social worker authority there in this area of Germany had been able to get legal custody of the children, even though they left them in the home. And
wow.
Just last week, the social workers went to the court on an emergency ex parte basis, even though there was no emergency. And they decided that they were going to take these kids, and they have now taken them. And it is just it's really pretty, it's a pretty sad and tragic thing that happened to this family.
And let's be very clear, this there is no abuse going on here. They're not taking these kids because they're being abused.
Not at all. There's no discussion of any kind of abuse or neglect in any of the court papers at all. Zero. The only issue is that this family refuses to send their children to school because they homeschool and have been doing so for years. In fact, the kids have never been to school. Now they're going to end up in school, unfortunately, most likely, because that's the only thing the family can do in order to get their kids back. They're going to have to go along with it. But at this point, the German state, has possession of the children. They're in a group home, horrible place for innocent Christian children or any children, really, who have loving parents to be. And, we're doing everything we can to support them. We're helping fund their legal defense. We are supporting the attorneys they have there, and we're trying to bring media attention on this so that the authorities there know that they're being watched and will hopefully, return the children in a fairly short period of time. That's our hope.
Okay, so let me just kind of draw some conclusions here. If you are the tinfoil hat variety like I am, and you believe that big government wants your children in government schools so that they can train you up to their standards and not yours, this example in Germany is it, folks. I mean, we're not far from it, but it's very extreme in Germany. And the reason I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Donnelly, they want all of the kids in government schools there so that they can indoctrinate the kids into the ways of socialism and big government without the interference of parental involvement.
Well, that's essentially correct. The German Supreme Court has ruled in two cases that it's a legitimate purpose for the government to require all children to go to state-approved schools so that children can be socialized, in accordance with what the state deems to be appropriate. And that if parents want to, you know, influence children, they can do so on their own time, not on our time. The German state has said through the courts that it has an equal interest in how children are raised in Germany, which is mm-hmm. perverse, absolutely perverse. They've got it completely backwards. And, you know, and I'll tell you, it's one thing when you look at our own Supreme Court, as many issues we can disagree with them, back in 1925, almost 100 years ago, they did get that right, recognizing that parents have a fundamental right to direct the education and upbringing of their children, and that children are not, as the Supreme Court of our country said, the mere creature of the state. In Germany, apparently, they believe that children are the mere creature of the state, and that's how they act.
That's frightening, folks, and we are on the cusp of that. So we have talked at length here on Culture Vigilante about the Romicke family and their journey to the United States to flee Germany so that they can homeschool their children. And you are Homeschool Legal Defense is also representing the Romicke family. Tie it together for me here. Why is this important to us folks here, the homeschooling community and the regular, you know, the regular institutional school community? Why is this important to us?
If a German, if a democracy, any democracy, a Western government that lays claim to being a liberal democracy, can get away with this kind of activity without other governments saying anything or without some kind of action being taken on the part of free people, then it can happen here. In fact, you know, the honest truth is, Lisa, this kind of stuff does happen in the United States. It just doesn't happen for homeschooling. And so the question is, how long is that going to last?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a government that, you know, can tell us we have to buy health care, can tell us that we can't have a particular kind of life-saving medical treatment, and any number of kinds of medical treatments, tells us, what kind of things we can say and what kinds of things we can't say, tells us what things we can, you know, almost gets to the point of telling us what we can and can't believe, and if we believe certain things or act in a certain way in accordance with our religious convictions, we're going to be punished for it. That's the country that we're living in today. And so, you know, why is it so far-fetched to think that this kind of action won't happen here? And if we don't want it to happen here, we need to take some action, and we need to be prepared, prepared to defend ourselves and our liberties, and we need mm-hmm. to actually do so. And that's what this is about. This is making people aware. And I know, you know, the reality is, it sounds like people on your show already are aware of this kind of thing. And so we're kind of talking to the choir here. But the people who are listening to you and listening to us right now, they need to talk to their friends. And they need to talk to other people in the community and let them know about what's happening. And, you know, folks, I hate to say it, this is the kind of thing that we're going to be looking at in the future if things don't change.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it almost, it's going that way because, I mean, maybe you can give us an update on the Romicke family. The Romicke is a family who came here legally. They went through all the legal channels to get to the United States from Germany because they wanted to homeschool their children. They actually, I think, came here and were granted asylum under religious persecution, and then maybe you can tell us the rest.
Well, sure. The Romicas came here in 2008. They actually won an asylum claim. They claimed they were being persecuted for homeschooling, and that if they went back to Germany, they would have this kind of thing happen to them, the thing that just happened to the Wunderlich family last week, and mm-hmm. that was something that they had a legitimate fear of, and they won. An immigration judge actually said, yeah, we're not gonna send this family back, we're gonna give them asylum. But the Obama administration revoked that asylum, and when we went to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit Court basically laughed us out of court, saying, aha, what are you talking about? This is a democratic country. This is just a country that's enforcing its neutral law that says every child has to go to school. There's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with
mm-hmm.
that? And it's absolutely unbelievable that a three-judge panel in an American court would say such a callous, outrageous thing, ignoring all of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just basically ignored the facts of the case and threw it out. And now we're going to the Supreme Court, and we hope the Supreme Court will hear it. It's an uphill battle. The Supreme Court doesn't hear very many cases, very few cases, and so we're gonna hopefully prayerfully we'll go to the Supreme Court and they'll take the case and reverse it. But if they don't, we have other things we're working on. We're going to Congress and asking Congress to fix the law so that people like the Romikas and the Wunderlichs have a safe place where they can go to homeschool their kids, something that an increasing number of people here in the United States do. I mean, the government just found last week that their estimate, and this is the government estimate, okay, is that 3.5% more people than in 2007 are homeschooling. So it's a growing movement. And people around the world who aren't permitted to do it in their countries ought to be able to come here and get asylum if their countries are going to actually persecute them, like is happening in Germany and in other countries like Sweden. And unfortunately, there is an increasing number of places around the world that are actually tightening restrictions on homeschoolers. And this is a battle we fight here in this country on almost an annual basis, where there is some legislator in some state. And your state is not immune from this. Where there are always attempts to increase control on parents, and in particular, parents who educate their children at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this may not have legal grounds when you fight these kinds of things, but judges here seem to play fast and loose with the best interest of the child issue. You know, and how that would tie into parenting and parental choice for education. I think that's certainly the issue for the Romicky family. I don't know why that's not an issue. If we value parenting in this country, why that's not an issue in courts? I don't get it.
Well, it will be an issue, but you know, the best interest of the child standard is a standard that we only apply. In domestic courts, when parents can't agree on what's best. Now, the Romikky situation is different because that's an asylum claim. Now, if the Obama administration actually ever moves, I mean actually moves, to actually kick the family out of the country, right now they have a deferred action status, and so they're here legally, and the government is not officially not taking action against them. But if they did, we certainly would raise that issue in court and say, you know, you can't send these kids back to Germany where they're going to be taken away from their parents just because they're homeschooling. Come on.
Right.
You can't do that. You just can't do that. And so hopefully we'll get a judge who will listen to us and agree, and we'll get continued stays for this family so they can stay here and homeschool their kids and not have to go back to Germany. But, you know, push comes to shove, they won't go back to Germany. We'll help them go somewhere else. But what a shame that this country, you know, the supposed greatest hope for liberty on earth, kicks a German family like this back out of our country because we don't want to give them protection for being able to homeschool their kids. How terrible is that?
Yeah, and you just kind of have to wonder if they're not being persecuted for entering the country legally, you know, and putting casting a dark cloud over the illegal immigrant situation. These folks did everything by the book. They followed the rules. They're gainfully employed. They're not a burden to the culture or society in any way, and they're just they're almost as persecuted here as they were back in their homeland. It's just horrible.
Fortunately, they're not quite that persecuted. I mean, if they were in Germany, they'd be having a much harder time. They're being treated. I mean, they're being left alone right now, fortunately, and we'll pray that that continues. But the government certainly has not extended, you know, American hospitality to these folks, and it's shameful that the Obama administration and our court system both has slammed the door on this family, and it tells you a lot about where things are in our country, at least as it regards to the federal government, and its willingness to extend freedom to people from other places who are literally being persecuted. This administration has not shown itself and isn't showing itself to be a friend of religious liberty, and I think this is just another example of that.
Absolutely. Okay, can you give us a little update on the UNCRPD?
Well, there isn't much to tell. I mean, the proponents have promised this; they're going to bring this back. And we promise that we're going to fight it just as hard as we did last time. And right now, there are other events that are kind of sucking the wind out of the D.C. Beltway, Syria being the main one. Nobody seems to be able to talk about much else. And it certainly is a legitimate and very concerning issue. But right now, it doesn't appear that there is any immediate, within the next week or two, plans to bring that treaty up. But they have said they're going to bring it back up, so we are expecting to see it. We are ready to go. And people who are listening really need to understand that this battle is going to be just as hard, if not harder, to win this time around than it was last time. We had 37 senators or so who voted with us last time. These senators are under tremendous pressure to cave and to ratify this treaty. And so it is absolutely critical that people make phone calls, send emails, and let these senators know that they do not want foreigners making law for Americans, which is ultimately what this issue is about. This is about, is America going to remain a sovereign nation, and are we as Americans going to have Americans making law for us, or are we going to have foreigners making law for us, unelected, appointed foreigners making law for us?
Exactly, and we're here in flyover country. You're closer to the heartbeat of what's going on there. Can you explain to me, because I fail to see the wisdom, in why is there such pressure for our elected here in the United States to ratify United Nations treaties at all? I don't understand that.
I wish I could explain it to you in a way that makes sense. There really is no way to explain it. They've been in Washington, D.C. for too long. They've drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak. It's impossible, really, to explain what happens to people when they come into Washington, D.C. It is a town that is, $4 trillion of taxpayer money goes into Washington, D.C. and gets parsed out by 535 elected officials.
Right.
I mean, the power that they have and that goes to their head, and they think that they can just do whatever they want. They want to send a message to the world. They say they want the United States to be the moral leader in this area, and they feel like somehow that in order for us to exercise leadership, we have to sign a treaty, which is absurd. You don't need to sign a treaty to exercise leadership. The United States is already the world leader in treating people who have disabilities with respect and dignity under law. And there's no need to sign a treaty that is ill-defined, contains very problematic language, and would give federal courts more vague language on which to hang their crazy decisions. We just don't need that.
Absolutely.
So, I wish I could explain it to you. I can't understand it myself.
It's a quandary, absolutely. So, Mike Donnelly, Homeschool Legal Defense, how can we help you in these causes?
Well, Lisa, if people are homeschoolers and they're listening and they're not members of HSLDA, they need to join. They need to join up. It's very inexpensive, and the value far outweighs the minor cost of joining. So they need to go to hslda.org and click on the join button. If people are not homeschoolers who are listening, they can go learn about homeschooling, and I'm sure they hear a lot about that from you. If they're interested in supporting our work, they can certainly donate. The most important thing people can do is pray and keep us in their prayers. We really need that. We're under a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of work to be done, and a lot of different things. And we're limited in our resources, and so we need people to partner with us financially, prayerfully, and through membership support. And people can do that in a number of ways, but they got to go to hslda.org. To take a step. And they can get more information about all these things we've been talking about as well if they go to hslda.org and click on the stories right there on the front page, the Wunderlich stories, the first page, right there on our homepage. They can get all the information they want, learn about the Common Core that we're fighting against and the UNCRPD. We've got tons of lots of pages of information with really pertinent, relevant data to help people understand what these issues are and how they can take action on them.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much for being with us and giving us an update on those issues tonight. Mike Donnelly, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, please go to hslda.org. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again soon and keep us updated.
You bet. Thanks, Lisa. God bless you. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. Thanks for being with me. We are kind of wrapping it up this evening, this Wednesday evening. First week in September. My God, I don't know where the summer went. It's gone. It'll be Christmas before you know it. And as you just heard, send us a couple dollars via our Secret Santa promotion. We want to help some Missouri families maintain the magic of Christmas for those kids. So just click that Secret Santa tab and send us just a couple dollars. You know, if everybody just sent a couple of dollars, I know it's tough for everybody this year. This year hasn't been any better than last year economically for most of us. And just a couple dollars here and there, we'd be able to do that for folks. We raised $1,000 last year. We're going to try to raise two this year and help 30 families. We helped 15 last year. So send us a couple of dollars. I earlier stepped on Dave Court's Hour of Truth promo. Hour of Truth airs on Monday evenings at 7 o'clock. Join Dave on Monday evenings. And on Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock, Cynthia Davis is on. She had Sheriff Mack on last night, so you can go back in the archives and listen to that great interview and join her every Tuesday evening. Dave also runs a Fair Tax show on Saturday evenings as well. He's really hot on that Fair Tax issue, and we're glad to hear that. So join us here on Missouri Grassroots Radio every week. You can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Look for Culture Vigilante. And you can follow me also on Examiner.com and Politichicks.tv. Look for Lisa Payne Nager there. Want to thank all my guests for being with us today. Great information from Mike Donnelly on from HSLDA, and Frida and Judy from Missouri Precinct Project. We'll have them on again real soon. Keep us updated on all the issues. And go to MissouriTorch.com, folks, and get all that great information from Dwayne Lester. Nobody's reporting on Missouri issues like Dwayne Lester is. He's really shown some light in the very dark recessed corners of Jefferson City, and they're hopping fast trying to keep the information spreading out there. So thank you so much for joining us. Join us next week, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time here for Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Until then, we'll talk to you later.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.